This is Scott Richmond
and Arnie Sherman.
You're listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. Arnie, good morning. Today we have some special programming.
As many of our listeners know, John Engen, long-term mayor of Missoula, died on August 15th. And we were lucky enough over the past 6 years or so to have him on our show many times as a guest. And we're going to use the next couple of weeks to share with our listeners again the comments, thoughts, and life of John Engen.
Welcome to What Do You Know on KGVO. We are honored to have his honor here on our show this morning. Mayor John Engen, welcome.
Thank you. The honor is all mine.
Welcome to KGVO.
You know, John, you've been mayor here, as you know, for 10 years. The most popular elected official in the state. I think the last time you had somebody run against you, you got 66% of the vote. So we want to know a little bit about how this happened, how you got through your life to this point. This is like, do you remember that Ralph Edwards show, This Is Your Life?
I do indeed.
Well,
yeah.
We're going to try to make this a sort of a replica of that, a mini radio version of This Is Your Life.
Fair enough.
So let me lay the rules of engagement for this show.
Done.
We're like Fight Club. There aren't any rules. Okay, so, but in fairness, since we're a station of journalistic integrity and higher moral purpose, and we're kind of the media compass for the community, we're not going to ask you about certain things. We're not going to ask you about the Montana Water Carlisle saga. I won't ask you about your bariatric surgery in which you've lost 120 pounds or so. Although I am sort of disappointed, frankly, that we now have half a mayor. I voted for a whole mayor. And we kind of have a half a mayor now, and I'm jealous. I'm jealous and angry at the same time. So that's sort of the rules, and we want to make sure you agreed with how we're going to the premise of moving forward.
As I tell my staff, I'll sign anything.
Good. What the hell is going on with Montana Water? I mean, what happened there? Well, just give us the scoop on that.
All right. So for purposes of clarity, it's Mountain Water Company, right, which is has been a subsidiary of a California company called Park Water Company, which has been a subsidiary of a fund called Carlisle Infrastructure Partners, which, right, is a subsidiary of Carlisle Group. We have been engaged in pursuit of owning Mountain Water Company now for quite some time. We are, I hope, nearing the end of a legal battle that will allow us, on behalf of the citizens of the city of Missoula, to own that precious utility. There have been what I describe as shenanigans. I have been fairly...
That's a good word, shenanigans.
I've been fairly vocal about it. Today the company is allegedly owned by another investment fund that operates
Canada
utilities, right?
Yeah.
So Algonquin is the parent company. They operate a U.S. subsidiary called Liberty Utilities, and Liberty says they own Mountain Water.
Can we chart this on
today?
The wall, because it's already confusing?
Oh, believe me, it requires a flow chart, and frankly, it's required quite a number of attorneys. Fortunately, we have very good ones. We believe that the other side has misstepped, and that based on our previous court rulings, we're where we need to be, and we're going to own a water company.
Well, that's good. You know, as I recall, there was a time where we thought this was going to all be done by 2013, but the shenanigans, as you put it, has kind of put roadblocks in the whole process, hasn't
right.
it?
Yeah, and what Carlisle had said fairly early on is that they intended to defend this lawsuit vigorously, and that I think has translated into time and money. But this is not about me or the city council. It is about about the future of Missoula, and we are the single municipality in the state that does not own and operate its own water utility.
Right, it's not as if this is some uncommon phenomenon.
It's across the state, across
the country.
Yeah, and so I'm not interested in scare tactics. This is just a fundamental utility that makes sense in the public realm. But you can see places where there are problems with water around the country, and Missoula does not need to be one of those places, and water does not need to be a commodity, and there is no reason for any of us to believe that over time, with changes in laws, regulation, and as water becomes ever more precious, that a private company would be much more inclined to commoditize that precious resource and sell it than a municipality would, and that is fundamental.
Tell me, I'm new to town, fairly new to town. When did this saga start? When did this whole initiative start with water?
So I originally began conversations with Robert Dove of the Carlisle Group about purchasing Mountain Water as part of a larger transaction that Carlisle was involved in 2010. So Carlisle bought Mountain Water and its sister companies in California from a guy named Sam Wheeler, who had operated them for decades. That transaction was consummated in 2011, and we began, frankly, our support for that sale was predicated on my conversation with Mr. Dove that allowed us to purchase the system from Carlisle. They were interested in California, and they still are interested in California, and I believe that Liberty is most interested in California as well, because there is a lot of money to be made in the California water market.
Who have been the toughest critics of this plan?
It's been a mixed bag, and I don't expect folks to blindly follow me in every direction. So what we have tried to do over the course really of the last 4 years is educate people as to why municipal ownership makes more sense. Judge Karen Townsend, in her decision granting the preliminary order of condemnation, really lays out a great case for why it makes sense for the city to own this facility. Occupational hazard of being mayor of any place is there are critics. Occupational hazard of being mayor of Missoula is you might have more in some cases, depending on the day. But that's part of my job. And I was hired to make change, and I was hired to lead. And I have a job application that I fill out every 4 years. And if I'm not the person, then I get sent packing.
Right. And so far, most popular. I mean, every other politician in the state would kill to have 66%.
I know.
Voter approval. So I want to move on to something else. Weight.
Yep.
Fat.
Yeah.
The final frontier.
Right.
I have had, as many people have, struggles with weight my whole life. And I remember very vividly one time when I went on this exercise program, whole bunch of us guys threw in $1,000 a piece. We thought we really needed to have some skin in the game, literally. And we went on a six-week crash course. Right. And I got down to, I'm 6 foot tall. I got down to about 222 pounds. And I thought that was pretty damn good. I was wearing a 44 suit. I was feeling good. I worked my butt off for 6 weeks. And I'll never forget, I went to see a doctor to get a physical, and he was dictating it to his dictaphone. He says, I have a 6 foot male in here who's obese. And I had just gotten down to the lowest weight that I had been in so long. And I'm trying to get down there again. So you just have, had bariatric surgery 3 months ago. And how's that going for you? I can tell by looking at you. You're svelte. You're in prime fighting weight. You're looking good. Well, tell me what the experience has been like.
By the way, you can see a picture of him on our blog at newstalkkgvo.com.
Okay, he looks great.
Yeah. Well, you're very kind. You also have a low standard. And I appreciate that. I have generally... I have generally declined to spend much time talking about this for a number of reasons, but I'm happy to talk today about it a little bit. One of the reasons is that it is sort of my personal struggle, and what I never want people to be under the impression that someone who is obese, in my case, morbidly obese, is somehow not capable of doing their job, or is somehow is less of a person, right?
Some people would view it as a weakness because you can't keep your weight under control,
right?
But as we know, it's the number one New Year's resolution by everyone every single year.
Yeah. But it's a disease.
Yeah,
it's like you know, other. It's like addiction of some sort. Right. It's a disease.
It's like you with kosher hot dogs.
It's like me with kosher hot dogs. Or chauffeur salami.
Yeah.
But it might not, but isn't that, I mean, it is what that is, so, what it is.
So I can tell you that I began to struggle with my weight when I was about 12 years old. I am now 51 years old. I lost my first 100 pounds when I was 19. I probably lost, I gained all of that back during my 20s and more, and lost it again and gained it back and more and lost it again. And I did the math one day, and I believe that most likely in my adult life, I have lost and gained about 1,000 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
At my heaviest this time around, I just had a checkup yesterday. At my heaviest this time around, I had lost a little bit of weight before I visited the surgeon. That was, I weighed 447 pounds. I go 6'2". And
you didn't pick a career in WWE or anything like that.
I did not, yeah. So I'm not diabetic. For a 51-year-old guy with my job, I don't suffer from hypertension much.
Amazing.
I am, unfortunately, a bit arthritic, but I found that, you know, I just didn't feel good. And when you're that big, you just, in my case, you just don't feel good. You don't breathe, you don't move, you ache. And I love my work, and I am happy to say in the 11th year of serving as Missoula's mayor, I still love the work, and I learn something every day, and I want to have the energy to do it correctly. And I've got, you know, you've got kind of a funny curve here. So I was 40 when I started this job, right? And I'm not today. So I've got this graph that age is going up, and weight was going up at the same time, and they were both dragging me down. And so, long conversations, I have a great physician. HIPAA only works one way, and I'm happy to out him. Michael Caldwell is a great family physician. I consider him a friend, and he has helped me try to figure this out through diet, through exercise. We tried it all, and we finally said, let's look at an option here. Bariatric surgery, I suspect, is not for everyone. The surgery I had is called a sleeve gastrectomy, through about 6 holes in my abdomen. Doctors Brad Picard and Charlie Swanick.
And you had it done here in town?
I had it done at St. Pat's.
At St. Pat's, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and the docs, through these small incisions, went in and amputated 90% of my stomach and stitched it up and pulled that 90% out of a hole. And I woke up about 3 hours after going down. My stomach was mostly gone. I ate a popsicle, oddly enough, because through a drain that was in my side at that time, you can tell if there's a leak, because the purple popsicle will start leaking out the side of your body. And I didn't have a leak. And the next day, I was just in the hospital overnight. The next day, I had a, an x-ray while drinking radioactive formula just to check for leaks, and there were none. in what can only be sort of a victory dance for a middle-aged man. The only demand of me before I left was that I break wind.
And hey, you could do it here in the studio.
It's a gift.
That's one of our demands.
Yeah.
But not until I leave.
Before you leave.
Like it's even voluntary for me anymore. And we did that, and the recovery, apart from I couldn't take anti-inflammatory, so I was really I had a really difficult time getting around for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Today I weigh 291 pounds.
Wow.
Fantastic.
Feel pretty amazing.
So what's the end strategy? What happens when you get down to your, you know, the weight range that you want to be?
So I will confess, you know, my joy and biggest fear, this is a tool like every other tool, right? And a gifted eater can get past this thing. You can grow.
Right. I see you got that Fitbit on your wrist.
You can grow your stomach, right?
Right.
You can drink milkshakes. You can get the calories some other way. And I, again, have gained and lost and gained and lost. Right. And so I would, you know, the docs and I are talking about, if I went around 250, that'd be a pretty healthy weight for me. My male modeling days are over.
Shucks.
What are you feeling?
It's surprising.
So you're feeling good. You got good energy. Are you more active now? Are you working out?
I can be more active.
Right.
I am not a big fan of winter, but I love to walk. And so as
you get out and see your constituents, yeah, you know, wander the neighborhood.
As weather gets a little bit better, it's going
hiking
to be
hiking too.
Yep. Yeah.
So, but you're not going to.
Yeah.
They're not going to.
So I live in the Rattlesnake, and I have great access to our trail system.
Sure.
And I have dogs who like to walk.
They're not going to give you the 90% back, though, right?
You know, I had suggested we put it on eBay just to see.
Just to see. You never know.
But apparently, there's something about that.
Does the urge to eat less, how does it change your behavior? Meaning you have 90% less.
You have more
of
time. You don't have to be sitting around eating.
Well, there's that.
Yeah. So,
how does it work?
So oddly, in my case, and I'm told this is unusual, I am hungry all the time.
Okay.
I call it head hunger. My desire to hit the buffet has not gone away, but my ability to eat much is gone. So I eat foods that are high in protein, high in nutrient value. I eat very little in the way of carbohydrate, and I am physically sated pretty quickly.
Good.
Yeah, I mean, I've got my stomach is a sleeve that is an extension of my esophagus.
Right.
This is like a paleo diet that he's on. It's kind of paleo.
I guess it. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's they're
paleo
all trends.
Kind of guy.
Yeah.
So it's the right diet.
So I want 30 grams. I want about 70 grams of protein a day, according to my doc. Part of that's a protein shake. I mean, I need to make sure that I get all the other vitamins,
sure,
and minerals, etc. But I don't feel so much of eating is habit, and you know, as I tell people, I'm really running low on vices. I quit drinking in 2010. I
start now.
You know, I was always afraid of the munchies.
Out.
Yeah, right.
There's nothing left for us guys except fishing, movies, and comic books.
For me, what's left is variations on coffee drinks.
Yes.
So yeah,
or tea. I mean, it's a tea town.
Dairy?
So
did you cut dairy out?
You know, I can and do eat cheese, and I love it.
Well, there are good substitutes. Like, so there's almond milk. There is.
Oh yeah, I don't have to do that.
Dr. Scott here will prescribe. Yeah,
I'm not lactose intolerant, and frankly, because I'm the mayor of Missoula, I'm not intolerant in any way.
That's right. No, you're a very tolerant mayor. Let me. Well, first I want to say I appreciate you sharing that
with us.
A lot of people would, and curious minds want to know, and now you've given us what we want to know. And
well, it's one of those deals, and
we want to cheer you on.
And I never, you know, part of this is I have, so many people have so many challenges in this world, and the curse of the job is that I see a lot of human suffering, and mine pales in comparison. It is what it is, but there are so many people who have so much going on, so much to overcome, and my deal is, you know, I'm a privileged person with a good salary and good insurance.
Yeah, well, and you're mayor of one of the top 20 cities, small towns in America by almost every poll. Every time there's a poll that comes out that says 20 best places to live, 20 best, you're it. Your town is here.
Yeah, people love the place and for good reason.
That's true. Let me switch gears a little bit here on you. I remember when you were a journalist, editor at the paper, you wrote a very funny column. So what happened with that? Did you think politics would be more funny, more entertaining than being a newspaper journalist?
So I often tell people my last boss at the Missoulian and I had a fundamental disagreement. I wanted to work there, and he didn't want me to. We had a, you know, I think you can best describe, as downsizing. So I wanted to be a newspaper publisher. That was my
right. You went to UM for journalism.
Right. Yeah, I had a degree in journalism. I worked on the production side to make my way through school. When I graduated, applied for a job on the news desk, got that, worked on the editorial side, had written a column for a long time. There was some desperation for a youthful voice, and I used to be youthful, apparently. So I started writing a column for him when I was 17, and I continued that for a number of years.
The great column you wrote here, but it's funny. And
What
was kind of whatever, right?
Kind of like the show.
Yeah,
why anybody would eat lutefisk or something
exactly,
like that.
Yeah.
Oh, you were like the Larry King of...
Oh, no, I was not the Larry King of anything, oddly enough. I was, sort of a poor man's Dave Barry, Garrison Keillor type.
Mike Royko.
Yeah.
Mike Royko in Missoula.
Far less hard-hitting, I'm afraid. In fact, not hitting at all, generally speaking. But so I did that, and then I went to work on the production side of the newspaper, and... You know, at that time, the publisher's gig was really interesting. You had a leadership role in the community. I think it was you had some staying power if you were decent at it. And, you know, newspapers at that time, God, the margins were 40%. It was, literally a license to print money. But there was a change in structure. It made apparently no sense for me to remain in my current position. So I'm, I guess, mid-30s, making more money than I ever imagined I would make, which wasn't a great deal of money. It was like $50,000, but that was good money back then, and good insurance. And I was sort of given a choice to, you know, kind of move out of the position I had because it was no longer necessary and sell ads. And it's not that I would have been fine doing that, but that wasn't my chosen vocation. So I resigned.
Moved under the bridge.
Painted the house for about 18 months. And my wife suggested, yeah, get work, please. Really?
Get some
please.
Work.
So I ended up doing some freelance stuff for myself. I worked for Vans for a short time. They had at a time they wanted to do kind of an advertising and media company, and I worked for them for a time, and then moved on and really just went into my own business. We called it Engen Creative, and I did advertising, public relations stuff. I did graphic design because I had some of those skills as a function of my work at the newspaper, which was such a great job. I loved the newspaper culture. I loved the role of newspapers.
Every time there's a movie about, you know, newspapers, Spotlight or
All Print, right.
You want to go see. I want to go see because it is a fascinating culture, the news business.
It is, and I had really good friends at the newspaper. The editorial side was, you know, you had cynics and lunatics and true believers and savants and
that was just at the coffee shop before right. You got to work.
Right. Well, you reflected right the fabric of the community, right?
Yeah. I mean, and it was fascinating, but I mean, to a person, there was a commitment to community, and I think, you know, that commitment to community that I learned both as a journalism student, because I think I had a great journalism education and a great education really that prepared me for the work I do today. This is, you know, my work is, I am a generalist, right?
Right.
I have to know a little about a lot, and occasionally I have to do a deep dive to catch up to ensure that I'm doing my job correctly and making good decisions. But I learned to ask questions. I learned to be curious. I learned to be skeptical, which is different from cynical. And right. One of the things I always tell, you know, my staff and colleagues and constituents is that I reserve the right to be skeptical, but the day I'm cynical, I have to quit. You don't, politicians, public servants, mayors, you don't get to be cynical because people deserve more.
Not
than
unless
that.
You're running for president in 2016.
Well, that yeah,
that's a good segue.
Right, right.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. I've worked in a company town before. I worked in Middletown, Ohio, where there was Armco Steel. I worked in Oxford, Ohio, where there's Miami of Ohio University. How hard is it to do your job in an independent way when there's a 2,000-pound gorilla in the same feeding space, when you have the University of Montana here in a town this size?
You know, I've never thought about it as a 2,000-pound gorilla. I've been described as that myself occasionally.
You're not going to be able to do that for much longer.
Well, yeah. Be a fortunately, I have so many flaws, Scott, that my self-deprecating shtick can move from fat to any of a variety of neuroses and weaknesses.
Oh, that so, we're all like that's good.
Yeah, I got. So I will tell you that I have a. I enjoy a great relationship today with Roy Sinkstrom. He's somebody I respect and appreciate. He's got, you know, there's sort of this long list of. Jobs that I'm glad I don't have, and I occasionally hear people say, you know, I wouldn't be mayor for all the tea in China, or you right. trot out the right. cliche. I happen to love the job. I try to do it in a way that folks, pardon me, I try to do it in a way that folks think that, wow, he looks like he's having fun. Maybe it would be a fun job to have.
Right.
Maybe it's rewarding. Royce, you know, Royce has lots of, well, not unlike my job. You have a lot of responsibility, very little control, and a lot of accountability. But what Royce and I have been able to do is figure out ways to communicate. And there are lots of ways for us to cooperate. And I think over time, I mean, when University of Montana can kind of move past some of the sort of crisis management, and,
right.
and you know, a lot of that is, God love him, he's had sort of crisis du jour, you know,
ongoing.
during the better part yeah. of his administration, but has, I think the dust will settle and there will be opportunities. I think universities and cities should plan together, and we've talked about transportation in particular around that, but they're and we're doing some
how
work.
So
transit, for example, mm-hmm. parking, connectivity, trails, and so we're talking about, you know, there's a ASUM has a bus system, we have a bus system, where is there overlap, where are there opportunities to cooperate,
right?
You know, are we buying fuel in the right way, are we buying buses in the right way, are we adjusting routes accordingly, etc. You know, we do parking management, they do parking management. Does it make sense that we have two agencies doing that work?
Sure.
I think that housing is another critical area where we can work together. And what I'd like to do over the course of, you know, 2016 is sort of try to address housing policy soup to nuts in Missoula, and that ranges from student and faculty housing to senior housing mm-hmm. to low income housing to housing for folks who are never going to get fixed by addiction treatment. I mean, I believe that we continue to have a responsibility to folks. And in fact, what I'm going to propose to the Missoula City Council is that the city of Missoula adopt a resolution and a policy stating that it is a basic human right for folks to have safe, decent shelter in Missoula, Montana. And that matters not whether you got a plug nickel in your pocket and you're right. high as a kite or you're a gajillionaire.
So I can move into your house pretty soon now and become residence?
Anytime, Arnie. Anytime. There's always an extra bedroom for you.
And an arm guard.
But universities and communities can work together on those issues as well. We've done really well working together. You know, the sexual assault stuff that we worked through together, sure. that was certainly painful, but I believe that the city of Missoula and our police department is, we are a better place for women and other victims of, or potential victims of sexual assault. We are a better police department because we treat victims with greater respect. Mm-hmm. We are in a better position through our training to solve crimes, to bring perpetrators to justice. And I think that that translates into good work that's been done on the part of the university with regard to its public safety personnel, its policies and practices, its education of students, faculty, and staff. So there are lots of ways to work together.
What do you think we could do better? Right? What could we do better as a community to make it even a safer community?
With regard to public safety, you know, we are blessed. And again, I've had the experience of managing a police force with three chiefs. I have dealt with difficult situations with officers who in one case we had an officer who ended up in federal prison. We've had some disciplinary problems, and certainly we had the sexual assault issue, but I tell you that to a person, we have at last count, I believe we had 103 sworn officers at the Missoula Police Department. And to a person, those women and men get up every day committed to serving their community. I have a responsibility to ensure that those folks are accountable, but they largely make it easy.
And properly resourced.
Yeah. And we don't have, we don't have a police force. We train well. Mm-hmm. We train relentlessly. It is an extraordinarily difficult job.
I'm sure.
And it gets more difficult.
Particularly in a college town. Come on, you got a disproportionate number of young people.
Well, in a town of Transient, well, yeah. You're on I-90 here. There's so much coming in and out of here.
It's very tough.
And it gets increasingly difficult. So here's what most citizens, and I don't pretend to be a police officer, and I will never be in a position to cross the thin blue line, right? But I work closely enough with these men and women to understand that they see things on a semi-regular basis that you and I never want to see in our lives. They see kids who are abused and misused, and
domestic disputes.
They see the ugliest parts of
right.
who we are as a society. They see it relentlessly, and they swore an oath to figure it out, right, and to do their jobs. And it's really tough. And there are folks, though, who are cut out for it. There are folks who can make careers of it. There are folks who can maintain composure and professionalism and enthusiasm for the work over time. Mm-hmm. And we have lots of them, and they are really admirable. We have a great police chief who is open and thoughtful. We just had another conversation just this morning. We're always talking about how we deploy resources. We're always talking about what needs to happen in terms of staffing, what needs to happen in terms of addressing sort of broader issues. We have trends that sort of come and go. There's a bunch of meth around again.
Right.
And so we're dealing with that. Right.
And you might see some trends. I mean, heroin's popular in some states.
Right. Heroin's big in Missoula. Yeah. I mean, it's sort shocking. Of surprising. And,
yeah.
And
prescription drugs.
And the consequences of that stuff are the consequences of that play out in the community. And again, we tend to be in our bubbles, right?
Right.
And so some of it goes, sort of missed or ignored. Our folks don't get to do that. So we're paying attention. They're seeing ugly stuff. They also get to do some fun stuff, but it's tough work.
Yep. So let me, we're in the, even though it seems like it's been going on for years now, we're at the beginning of the campaign for the leadership of the free will. The first primary is coming up very shortly. You know, in this campaign, in my eyes, and I've been around politics longer than you have, although not in elected capacity, you know, the campaign has deteriorated into a crusade where, to me, facts and thoughtfulness are demonized, right? Yeah. And crudeness and mean-spirited attacks are glamorized. What's your take on all this?
Well, I agree with you. And, you know, it's... Frankly, I'm not sure how you turn the tide today at the national level.
But it also filters down. You're going to see it filter down to the governor's race in the state. Yep. We've already heard it. It's going to filter in the congressional races. It's clearly the mantra now of the political realm to get crude, you know, ugly, mean-spirited as a way of conducting politics.
It is.
And substance and dialogue and thoughtfulness is not only eschewed, it's almost looked down on.
Secondary.
Like. Yeah. Well, yeah. And so thank heavens we still have local politics. And you know, my friend Pat Williams, you know, often says all politics are local. You know, you're on the front lines. There's a lot of truth to that. So I've run for mayor 3 times. The first time we had quite a primary field. A lot of interesting folks. It never got ugly. Second time I ran unopposed,
right,
really wasn't ugly. I criticized myself a bit, but you know, threw some mud at myself. But no, it wasn't ugly. Last time I ran, had three or four opponents. People in Missoula have an expectation that you talk about issues and stuff that matters to them.
Substantive, right.
Yep. And when you veer off, I mean, when you veer from that, it sounds goofy and doesn't make a whole great deal of sense. But it's you know, you get to these higher levels where the more removed you are from your constituency, I think the more potential for that kind of ugliness. But you look at my friend Steve Bullock, who recognizes this issue at the state level, and I think a lot of folks at the state level recognize it, and I'm hoping we'll start to see a little bit of a change. And clearly the money that's involved in politics is
enormous.
I mean, that it's what makes you loud, right?
Sure.
The more you got, the louder you are.
Well, they're going to spend billions on the president.
Right.
It's unconscionable, well, right, when you really think about it.
Oh, absolutely.
So let me ask you this.
Right.
Someday you won't be mayor. Right? Someday you won't be mayor. Hopefully it's not because...
Some have suggested tomorrow.
Well, someday.
Right.
You know, and when the time comes, do you have aspirations for higher office? I mean, you got to look at some of the candidates that are running out there for Congress, Senate, governor, even for president. And you have to say to yourself, right, in the little voice inside, how hard could it be to do a better job than that?
Well, yeah, the little voice inside is, you got to watch out. the reason I ran for mayor, the reason I have continued to run for mayor, and the reason I get up in the morning and do this job is because fundamentally I have a chance every day to make a life better. My job as mayor of the city of Missoula is to make lives better. I don't make all of them better every day. Some people get hurt in the process in ways that I may not anticipate, but I'm doing my best every day to move a community forward in a way that makes it safer, better, cleaner, more prosperous, healthier every day. And that's whether you sleep on a sidewalk or on a king-size bed in a mansion. And at the local level, as mayor of the city of Missoula, I get to do that stuff. I think it would be enormously challenging, and I respect the people who do it. I think it would be enormously challenging to be a United States congressman.
Right.
I think it would be enormously challenging to be a United States senator. We have people who do it, and there are some of them I love and admire and have supported over the years. But in terms of being able to see a net effect on your community, in terms of being able to work with exceptional people in a place that is beloved by many, you can't beat being the mayor of Missoula, right, Montana. So when we talk about higher office, to me, we talk about...
Pyramid's upside down, yeah, right? You think the higher office is being mayor.
To me, we're talking about different office.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm glad folks want to do
I want
that
to ask
work.
John who he's who's he supporting. He supported Obama in 2008.
And Obama came here and that
and was 12.
A, and 12.
And 12 was amazing.
All right, so we have Hillary,
I owe
Bernie,
Hillary,
and O'Malley.
I owe Hillary.
Okay, it's Hillary.
Yep.
Yeah. What happened to O'Malley? No.
Yeah.
Who?
Who?
Well, Schweitzer said he supported O'Malley, and he said you don't always have to support the person that wins. That's what Brian
he did
said.
Well,
that's
right.
He did say that.
My first presidential election, I voted for Walter Mondale. So,
that's what right. Do you think Bernie Sanders? Well,
where's the beef? You remember that? That was the best line he had in that campaign.
I'd like to know what you think of Bernie Sanders, though, and kind of his strategy and how he's been building that.
You know, I
there's some similarities.
There are. I mean, this sort of grassroots notion. I mean, so what happens is cynicism, right? And we're back to that notion of skepticism versus cynicism. Right. And I think there has been sort of too much, there's been too much deception and corruption and goofy rhetoric. People want something different.
Right.
That's why you got Trump.
Right.
Right.
So
you're
yeah.
going to get something
he's,
different
he's,
with him.
He's different, yeah. And, you know, and I think, while I certainly support Hillary Clinton, she is absolutely the establishment candidate on my side of the ticket. And there are lots of people who on either side of the aisle, and that aisle is as weird and as broad as it's ever been, who think establishment represents status quo, and they don't want it.
Right.
They
right.
don't want
That's
it.
True.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens, right? Because Bernie's changing the conversation, really, and the whole landscape.
But you know, that's only through the end of the primary season.
But
when that primary season's over, you're going to see both candidates, whoever they are, on both sides of the aisle, go back to the bread and butter kind of rhetoric that the party stands for. Yes,
I like the idea of what he's mobilizing.
Sure.
This group of people that otherwise would not get out, and it remains. Let's see what happens.
Right.
But he's mobilizing a group of people that aren't part of the process.
But it is likely it's going to be Hillary Clinton versus probably somebody other than Donald Trump. I just don't see Trump making his way through the whole process.
Certainly my hope.
Yeah, well, you know, but you... In fact, I was mentioning to the mayor before the show, I started using the word Trumpery to describe, Donald's behavior. And by the way, he's being savaged by his own party more than even the Democrats. Democrats don't have to say much. You just have to listen to what Rubio and Cruz and Jeb have to say about him. So I thought that was sort of a made-up word because I don't have the kind of vocabulary that you have. But I went and looked it up in the Webster's and Oxford Dictionary, and there is such a word as Trumpery. And the definition is the practice or beliefs that are superficial or visually appealing but have little real value or worth. Showy but worthless, deceitful, baloney as a synonym for it. It's a perfect way to kind of describe the candidate. And if you probably told him this and gave him the definition, he would say thank you.
I think you're right. But, you know, I learn something every day in this racket. Trumpery is the word of the day.
It's a new word, and it's and we're moving forward with it. You've already talked a little bit about what you like about the job, and it's clear in your voice and your passion and your enthusiasm. There's a lot to like. What don't you like?
I don't like when
you got to come on this radio show and put up with us.
Yeah. No, this has actually been fun. I don't like it when people in my community suffer. And the sexual assault stuff was difficult. And knowing that it still goes on is difficult. Knowing that there are hungry bellies out there, knowing that there are folks sleeping in the cold, knowing that there are people who are addicted and mentally ill and don't have access to what they need, and not having figured out a way to crack that case is frustrating for me, and I would like to do more. I don't like misinformation.
You don't like being set up. Sometimes that happens.
Well, yeah. I mean, one of the things that happens, for better or worse, is because information is omnipresent and instantaneous, bad information can be omnipresent and instantaneous, and it's really hard to put a genie back in the bottle sometimes.
There are a lot of people out there when there's articles in The Onion or Andy Borowitz, they believe it's true.
Right.
They don't even understand satire.
Right.
They don't question satire.
Thankfully, the news cycle is much shorter, right? The things dissipate a lot quicker.
Right.
You know, and sometimes
it's about the attention span.
Well, right. But the old messages are hard to erase. I mean, for example, they're going to take the folks who have been critical of Planned Parenthood have been indicted by a grand jury.
Right.
And it's clear that what they were doing was, you know, illegal and misleading. Right. But it so far hasn't changed anybody's opinion who was against Planned Parenthood and the spin. They keep on, you know, sprouting information that's not accurate and not true.
I have one quick question.
Yep.
When people talk about bringing business, new business to Missoula, and is Missoula a magnet, from an infrastructure standpoint, from a tax standpoint, from a general, like, can we bring the Oracles to Missoula? How do you answer that?
Yeah, so I think the potential for that is there. I think Oracle needs a whole big pile of human beings who don't live here. I think we'd have to be a bigger community for that that sort of business. But great places to live are great places to do business.
Right.
And we work relentlessly to make this a great place to live and to attract the right kinds of business. And based on what I'm seeing sort of certently in the commercial sector over time, particularly in the last 2 years, what I hear from my folks at the Economic Partnership, what we believe just in general terms we're doing to ensure that we have high quality infrastructure, and infrastructure just isn't. It's not just streets and pipes anymore. It's green infrastructure, right? It's trails and recreational amenities and parks and schools. And we work pretty consistently as a community on all of those parts. And I think it starts to show. What happens is you look at the coasts, this notion, I can't remember the author's name, but he wrote a book, The Third Coast, right?
Right.
We are a market that is being discovered for all sorts of reasons. It is a great place to live, but it's also, Missoula offers city amenities in a small community. You can see a world-class performance at the University of Montana, but you don't have to pay a world-class price, wait in a world-class line, face metro traffic, and you can take it all in and then still walk down the street the next day and say hi to your neighbor.
Yeah.
So one last question for
yep.
you. Your first campaign slogan was Think Big.
It was indeed.
I thought it was one of the great slogans of all time in yes. politics. IBM. You can't use that one anymore for a number of reasons. Big, one is right. because you're half a mayor now. You're half-size mayor. You can't use that. Do you have a slogan you're thinking about for the next time you're going to run?
You know, so my last, that was my city council campaign yeah. slogan. My first mayoral campaign was working together. Last time was our Missoula, your mayor. Next time, I need to run again in 2017.
Right. Not that far off.
Maybe it'll be, it's the water.
It's
and a lot
it's
more.
The water. You can drink the water. How about that?
Yeah, right.
As opposed to Flint and some
right.
other places.
Yeah,
now.
God love them. That's tough.
Oh, God.
Mayor Engen, it's been a pleasure. Time
pleasure's
goes fast when
thank
we're,
you.
Mayor, when we're talking
delightful.
With you.
Yeah, thank you.
It has been a delight to speak to you.
Hey, Scott, one thing before we sign off with our listeners. Next
yes,
week
Arnie.
Is Super Bowl Sunday.
I know.
Our show will be on Super Bowl.
Where are
Sunday.
We watching the Super Bowl? Where are you watching the Super Bowl?
Well, it won't be him, unfortunately. The ticket prices are a little steep. But we have a great guest next week coming to join us. We have a Grizz favorite, Grizz
right.
All-American, Mark Mariani.
Nice.
Will be joining us on the show. For those of you that, almost all of our listeners know who Mark is. But for those that don't, he was All-American here at the University of Montana. He went on to play for the Tennessee Titans and ended up being a Pro Bowler. This past two seasons, he's been with the Chicago Bears
played
as a wide receiver. And we're going to have him on talking about his Super Bowl predictions, life in the NFL, and other insider information as our guest for the 50th Super Bowl next Sunday.
I can't wait. Great guest. I mean, you are just a fountain of great guests,
well,
Mayor John Engen,
it's hard
Mark
to beat
Mariani.
John. It's hard to beat his honor.
I know, but I love that. I think it's great. It's great for our community.
No. Again, John, thank you very much for being here.
Yeah, you've been
live.
Delightful.
Pleasure,
thank
gentlemen.
You, Mayor
thank
Engen.
You.
All right, you're listening to What Do You Know on KGVO. We'll see you again next week with Mark Mariani. Thank you for listening to What Do You Know.
I can't wait for the next show, Scott.
I'm excited too, Arnie. If you'd like to suggest a guest, send me an email at scottrichman@townsquaremedia.com. We'll see you next week. And thanks for listening to News Talk KGVO.